Hello and welcome to the Mejlis Podcast, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. I'm Bruce Panier, host of the Mejlis and author of the weekly Central Asia in Focus newsletter. Kazakhstan is having elections to the Mejlis, or lower house of parliament, on March 19th, the first parliamentary election since the adoption of a new constitution in 2022. Campaigning has started, but these elections are a bit different. For the first time since 2004, independent candidates are allowed to compete for 29 seats that will be chosen in single-mandate districts. The remaining 69 seats will be chosen by party lists, and the seven parties registered to participate in the elections are all considered pro-government. These elections are part of what President Kasym Jomart Tokayev says is the creation of a new Kazakhstan. But is it? To discuss all this, I am joined by Paolo Sorbello, a journalist living in Almaty for many years now, and an English language editor at Kazakh independent media outlet Vlas.kz.
Hello.
Darhan Umurbekov is the digital editor at the Astana Bureau of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Kazakh service, known locally as Azatik. And thank you both for joining me. And the first question, I'll start with you, Darhan, but this question goes to both of you. So I want to hear both your comments on this. And I want to deal with some of the changes that the constitution has made in the parliament. The new constitution, according to it, it takes powers from the presidential branch, from the presidency, the executive branch, and gives them to the legislative branch or the parliament. Do any of the people you speak with believe that that gives these upcoming elections more importance than previous parliamentary elections? Darhan?
I would love to say yes, but it's hard to say yes now because the political analysts and experts, they all agree that in terms of check and balance, nothing has changed. And even though we are not seeing a comparatively lively election campaign, in that 30% of the seats are elected on a single mandate districts, the authorities are not losing their control, the grip on legislative body. So our presidential administration has still a full grip on the parliament. And even if all of those 29 seats will be taken by genuine opposition figures, the parties are still going to play an important role in deciding what to accept as a law. So basically, overall, we don't see any serious change.
Okay, thank you. And Paolo, same question for you. Do any of the people that you talk to think these elections are more important than the last two or three parliamentary elections they've run because parliament is supposed to have more power now?
Well, I wouldn't say that that's the reason why they are more important. First of all, because I agree a lot with Darhan, the control remains in the government and a ruling party as well. I mean, the Amanat ruling party is no longer Tokayev's party because Tokayev resigned last year. However, it's very much controlled by Tokayev and its government. It organized Tokayev's presidential campaign in November. And let's not forget that some of the members of the ruling party will also run in the single mandate districts, so as single people, as individuals. So there's a high chance that the composition of the parliament won't change much after the elections. I believe the change instead is not as much brought by constitutional amendments, but by the kind of new vibe, new color that is brought to this campaign this year. Kind of brings back the country to 19 years ago when we had the last time that single mandate districts were allowed to have individual candidates.
Okay, and let me ask you a follow-up question then. You know, there are independent candidates running, as you said. I believe right after they finished registration, they said there was 435 people registered as independent candidates, but some have since been disqualified, including some prominent activists. Could you speak a little bit about some of these independent candidates who are not running from government, not out of government, pro-government parties?
Yeah, I mean, there are a few of them, and they're all quite interesting, also because some of them are very, very young, and some of them probably weren't even born. I mean, they were just very, like, small children when the last time we had single mandate districts elections. So that's the exciting part, because it's new faces, it's new people who bring new ideas. The fact that they, some of them have been kind of taken down from the lists, from the candidates list, is a testimony of the confusion inside the electoral commissions, because the electoral committees are basically failing to be clear in the requirements that the candidates need to abide by to run. And some of the reasons why these candidates have been stricken off is actually being fought in court. And we've seen several times independent candidates being taken off and then put back on the lists because the candidate won in court against the electoral commission. So this is all to say that the system is quite complicated.
Okay, thank you. And Darhan, I also want to hear your thoughts on this too, if I could. You know, I'm thinking about, you know, Aigerem Tleojan, for instance, who was registered as a candidate, and I believe went to the Central Election Commission office to pick up her registration forms, and then was detained right when she left the building, and she's had problems. But can you speak about some of the individual cases, her case, or perhaps Kosai Makhambayev, or some of them?
Regarding Tleojan and Makhambayev, so they are being charged with criminal offenses during the January events last year. And when we asked for a comment from Evgeny Joftis, human rights defender, he said that since they're being charged with heavy criminal articles, so technically the authorities have formal rights to detain them. But the human rights defenders argued that they are being charged with made-up cases, that the authorities haven't provided solid evidence of them perpetrating the law during the January events. But there are other independent candidates who have their registration revoked because of the discrepancies in their tax declarations. And it seems like a huge drawback of the election legislation, because there are some instances where the candidates could do nothing to avoid not showing these discrepancies. You know, for example, Sanavar Zakirova says that when the local election commission revoked her registration, they said that she had shares on some companies and she didn't declare those shares. And Sanavar Zakirova told us that she was unaware of these shares, and someone allocated those shares to her, not without notifying her. So there are some situations when the candidates could do nothing to prevent this, misinformation in terms of tax declarations. And this it seems like a huge problem to many genuine independent candidates. And when we talk to local observers and local candidates, so pro-government candidates have never faced these kind of challenges. So it means that the authorities may have been using this uncertainty in legislation to hunt down critics of the authorities or opponents.
Thank you. And let me ask you also, could you give us the situation with Inga Imanbay right now? And is she still registered as a candidate? I know she wanted to register as a candidate. Is she still registered? And if you could explain also to our audience who Inga Imanbay is.
Inga Imanbay is the wife of a prominent young opposition figure, Jambulat Mamai, who has been struggling to register his party, Democratic Party of Kazakhstan, and who has been detained for many, many times for holding public assembly, for attending the January events, January protests. And Inga Imanbay is now being nominated both from her own and from on behalf of her husband as well. And she is rooting for real political changes. And she is considered to be like a genuine opposition figure and genuine opponent to the authorities. She's a journalist by primary profession, but now she's participating in public life. And to the best of my recollection, she's doing her campaign in Almaty, in a, you know, with full support of her allies. And so far, the authorities haven't made an attempt to revoke her registration.
Okay, great. Thank you. And now let's go. We're going to switch to the other part of this election, which is the party lists. And Paula, I'll start with you. There's seven parties registered to participate in elections. That's two more than was usually the case. And of course, the same three parties have been in parliament, are the only ones that have been in parliament for the last, after the last three elections, more than 10 years now. What can you tell us about the party lists, these parties that are registered? Any variation at all? All pro-government, pro-president?
Well, the three that were in parliament before and are likely to get to parliament again are clearly pro-government. The other two that were registered almost in a hurry last fall, they're not real opposition parties. One is called Respublica, which is also a way of confusing people because the former the opposition from abroad by Mukhtar Ablyazov, an opponent, a longtime opponent of former President Nazarbayev, his newspaper back in the day was called Respublica. So it's also a way of confusing people, but it's actually a blogger's party that roots for entrepreneurship. And who knows if they're even going to get one deputy in parliament. And the other one is a so-called ecological party or environmentalist party, which doesn't have any experience advocating for the environment. And so it's highly disputable whether these two parties are there to actually bring change as much as to bring confusion in the ballots.
Okay, thank you. And Darhan, we'll get to you. The people you talk about, do they see any difference? Can they distinguish these parties? Do they see any difference between them? When you look at or think about all seven of them, are they just kind of all the same pro-government party?
Yes, I think there are no doubts regarding two newly registered parties. I mean, they're all, almost all the observers and experts and analysts see them as artificially created pro-government parties. And if you look at the members of these initiative groups, they have never expressed opposition to the authorities, and they were always siding with the government. They were attending the pro-government campaigns in the past, and so there are no signs of them being like junior opposition parties. Regarding the old existing parties, they all prove that they support President Tokayev and they support all the ideas coming from the ruling party. And whenever we have a chance to ask them questions, why are you running for the election? Why are you opposing the ruling party? Their answer is like, we're not opposing, the ruling party or the president. We are just, we want to address some certain specific questions we are created for. Like when we talk about the Argent party, they try to portray themselves as the party for entrepreneurs. And they say, we only raise the problems of entrepreneurs. When it comes to Kazakhstan Khalq Party, who are the successors of the old Communist Party, they focus on the elderly, perhaps Slavs, who, have some positive recollections about the Soviet times. And there are like Aul parties, which are supposed to attract the voters from the rural districts. So that more or less the concept is the same to what Kremlin exploits in Russia. So they divide the voters into categories, and they are creating like sub-parties to attract those subcategories, but they are not letting a universal party that can compete with Amanat. So they basically they're saying we have all kinds of parties to satisfy all the needs of Kazakh people, and only Amanat or Nur Otan formally can is the most prominent, the most universal, powerful party that can be, that is above all these competing parties. So it's like a game, and it's not a new game. It's a, you know, strategy enacted during the Nazarbayev era, and some local analysts are disappointed that Tokayev is still using the Nazarbayev era tactics to hold new elections.
Great, thank you. And just for the benefit of some of our audience who might not have been following Kazakh politics in the last couple of weeks as closely as we have, there are no genuine opposition parties. President Tokayev and other officials promised that, or at least said that they had no objections to opposition parties. But several tried, Darhan, right? Several parties tried to register and were all rejected.
Exactly. There are Alga parties by Jasaral Kuanshalin, who has been very like a strong vocal critic of the authorities, and who has never been associated with the authorities, you know, because there are other false opposition figures who are affiliated with authorities. And there are a couple of parties related to oligarch in exile or businessman in exile Mukhtar Ablyazov. So one of them is Democratic Choice of Kazakhstan. Another one is Koshir Partiyasi, or the Party of the Streets. And the authorities declared both of them as extremists and illegal parties. And there's one more we've mentioned. It is Jambulat Mamay's Democratic Party of Kazakhstan movement. These are the movements or groups that have been constantly failing to register. And every time they apply for the registration, the Minister of Justice seem to find some, you know, innocuous discrepancies in their application. And meanwhile, new parties are registered in, you know, very narrow time. Like we haven't seen any signs or like visual evidence that they are campaigning to register party. We suddenly know that they applied for the party registration, and suddenly they are registered by the Minister of Justice. Meanwhile, there are movements that have been attempting to register for years, and the ministry finds every time like the super innocuous mistakes, and sometimes their reasons seem to be inappropriate for many in Kazakhstan.
Yeah, great. Thank you for clarifying that. We've reached a halfway point in our discussion, so it is time for me to remind that this is the Mejlis podcast, Radio for Europe, Radio Liberty's current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. I'm Bruce Benner, host of the Mejlis and author of the weekly Central Asia in Focus newsletter. We're talking about the March 19th elections to Kazakhstan's Mejlis, or lower house of parliament, and the current campaign for those elections. And joining me for this discussion are Darhan Umerbekov, digital editor at Astana Bureau of RFARL's Kazakh service, known locally as Azatik, Paolo Cerbello, a journalist living in Almaty for years now, and the English language editor at Kazakh independent media outlet Vlas.kz. Thank you both again for being on the program with me. Paolo, I want to start with you because you've seen several of these elections. You know, given that this is supposed to be part of the new Kazakhstan, do you see anything different on the streets, on TV, anything that would indicate to you that this election is something different from what we've seen in a few years ago, or you know, any of the last two or three times they've done elections?
Well, yeah, I mean, we've seen very strong targeted campaigns, especially on the internet, especially on social media, YouTube, Instagram. Whenever you go on social media, you can find the ads for this party or that party. Also, very interesting when that the informational posters in a designated places have been a lot of electoral banners being posted there. And also we've seen trucks with party logos, cars with party logos going by, people with party logos on their hats or on their t-shirts. That's quite interesting because we haven't seen that much color in recent elections and as much, let's say, diversity. Obviously, the fact that there are single mandate districts and individual candidates, that has helped with the color side of things. But at the same time, there's a lot of confusion. The voters, it's going to be 12 million voters, and they will be presented with up to 5 ballots on the day of elections. And so they're going to be struggling to find the names that they want to vote for, find the exact balance between the 66% party list and 33% single mandate district subdivision, both at the parliament level and at the local assembly level. So it's essentially a very complicated system that would work much better if also there was a history of fairer elections in Kazakhstan. But given the history of elections, I'm not sure whether this color that we see in the streets will be translated into a more colorful parliament.
Good point. Thank you. Darhan, what's it look like in Astana? The streets, you know, what people are, television, that all that. Does it look different than previous elections?
Yeah. Yes and no. We have now mixed election system. So two-thirds of seats are elected by a closed list proportional system, and they are being seats are elected in a nationwide single district. So for the proportional part of the election, so nationwide TV ads or TV videos are perhaps might be very effective, but for single mandate districts, so we see more and more indoor meetings, offline activities. And when you go to streets, like the any open space is infested by posters and billboards, and sometimes is a little bit annoying because, you know, these meaningless posters, so vote for me and I will do this and I will do that. They're specific proposals, specific ideas, which it's going to be very hard to implement. Even if they're going to win seats, and their idea, their programs like lack solid, rational ideas, like their pompous, meaningless promises. It looks like we are not ready, or since it's we are having the single mandate majoritarian plural system for the first time in 19 years, perhaps the candidates, even genuine opposition figures, are not ready or are unaware of how to hold like a quality campaigns. They are all struggling. On the other hand, they're very limited in terms of time and in terms of opportunities to generate, you know, donations and financial support. So they're acting or doing their campaigns in a very super limited conditions. Perhaps that's the reason. But overall, we see in comparison to the previous elections, it looks like the turnout will be a little bit higher. And I think that's what the authorities wanted in general, because OSCE's ODIHR missions always criticized or they gave strong remarks regarding the lack of competitiveness in the elections and the low turnout in big cities like Astana and Almaty. And these times, it looks like the authorities wanted more turnout to portray the elections as legitimate democratic procedure.
Okay, great. Thank you. And then let me follow up with another question. Are more people talking about the elections, the upcoming elections? I mean, is this in restaurants, on the bus, whatever? Is this real something that people talking more about than they did previous elections, or a lot about, or is it just kind of, well, you know, that situation of, oh yeah, more elections. Yeah, are you voting or not? And that's the end of the conversation.
Yes, of course, there are more talks about the elections, and especially on a regional level because of the political culture. So historically, the elections on a regional level or district level has always been more vibrant because there are different algorithms when it comes to electing local council members because the people vote on the basis of kinship, on the basis of being from one village, and so on and so forth, because they are going to see these people in everyday life. They know them in person, and for them, voting the election on a local level, are more important, are more vibrant, and for them, the election on a national level is something away, something that they cannot affect, or something the authorities has already decided what to be the outcome of the elections. That's why when it comes to single mandate regional or district level, people are very active, and even candidates are active, asking their relatives and friends to help their campaigns. And, it's done by hand-to-hand methods or indoor meetings or, by just calling to all the people, and that's it because of the scale. But when it comes to national level, I don't think that the interest changed a lot. Perhaps for some cities like Almaty and Astana, there would be more interest because there are many new people, and among them, the opposition figures or constant critics of the opponents, they may be the reasons to raise the interest to the national elections a little bit. But on a national scale, I don't see big changes.
Thank you. Paolo, situation in Almaty, are people on the street talking about these elections more than usual?
Well, yeah, not really. I agree with Darkhan. It's more at the local assembly level, at the Maslihat level, especially because that's the occasion for people to bring about the issues that are closer to them. So problems with infrastructure, the streets, the paving of the streets, the public transit, socioeconomic issues, not just the socioeconomic issues of their own neighborhood, but also their own personal finances, because they were affected by both the January events last year, but also the ongoing war in Ukraine. So they because people believe they can possibly potentially affect not the politics in general, not the ideology of the local assembly, but actually achieve a single issue victories by arguing their points with the candidates. But not really, we're far from point where, for example, in the European experience, but also in the Georgian experience, but also in the Kyrgyz experience, sometimes the debate is football teams, fans fighting each other over their favorite colors. We're still at the moment where the main discussions are held at a single issue level.
Okay, thank you, Paolo. And then I'm going to follow up with you then for a question, because we're getting close to the end here. We're running low on time. When you talk to people about the upcoming elections, and remembering that it's been 19 years since independent candidates were allowed to run, do people there? There's a lot of younger people, as you mentioned, are voting for the first time or competing for the first time. Do they see this as a change in the system, really? Or is it just simply this is a cosmetic change in one aspect of voting? I mean, you pointed out that even if opposition people won all the seats up in single mandate districts, they still wouldn't have a majority. So do people you speak with, do they think that this election, the way they're doing this election, marks a change in the way Kazakhstan's government has been conducting its affairs?
Well, yeah, I mean, on the one hand, they're aware of the fact that change won't happen on the 20th of March, so the day after the elections. But at the same time, they're excited of this window of opportunity. At the International Women's Day rally of March 8th, one of the feminist organizations that organized the rally has a candidate, promoted a candidate at the Majlis level. And they very joyously promoted her profile. And at the same time, at the rally, there were a lot of other candidates to the Maslihat and to the Majlis running around and talking to people. And this is just one moment in Almaty, but as also Darkhan mentioned, there is always discussion around. And this is because there is an understanding that this might be literally the starting point. Maybe, you know, where the there's not enough sort of political education to hold an election based on all the ideals and all the political ideologies yet. But at the same time, this could be a starting point where people start understanding that they can actually affect change and they can actually have a relationship with the candidate.
Great, thank you. Darkhan, same question for you too. The people you talk with in Astana, do they see this as something different in an election, part of a change?
Those who are participating in the election, they say that they're going to change the way how the parliament works. But to be honest, they are considered to be very naive, or what they say is considered to be like naivety, because of the reasons you've mentioned, that even if all those seats are being taken by the opposition, the majority will be on the ruling party anyway. So these elections are not going to change the course of direction, but for some people, it's going to be like some of the candidates, independent candidates are participating in the elections for the sake of experience, for the sake of just raising issues in the parliament, but they are fully aware of the limits they are going to have, even if they are going to win the election. And we forgot to mention that there are certain category of people who would like to be who would also love to run for the parliament but are boycotting these elections because they are not seeing it as a fair competition. They are seeing it as a tricky game by the authorities to attract more people, to attract more positive remarks from the international audience. Meanwhile, they're not going to let these junior opposition figures to change anything. So I would like to just highlight that there are some people who are waiting to see what would be the outcome of this election. And the fact that about like a dozen candidates are losing their registration seems like the authorities are not going to give up easily, even those limited 29 seats to the vocal critics of the government. So I would like to say that there is more of skepticism rather optimism.
Okay. Thank you very much, Darkhan. Fortunately, we are out of time. Thank you, Paolo, and thank you, Darkhan, and thank you to Nathan Shoemaker, our Majlis podcast producer in Washington, D.C. And a reminder, you can subscribe to the Majlis podcast or the Central Asian Focus newsletter by visiting Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's website at rferl.org. Thanks, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.